Welcome to Common Sense Care, parenting gender-confused children with truth and love. So-called affirmative care is the gender industry's one-size-fits-all answer for every person who struggles with their sex and gender identity. We believe that each child is an individual and should be given the care and support that's most appropriate for him or her. So welcome back. I'm Maria Keffler.
And I'm Erin Brewer. And what's our topic today, Maria?
Well, our topic today is the question, is there true trans? Wow. But before we get started on that, I just want to tell you how much I appreciate you being willing to do an episode with me this week, even though you're not at home. Viewers might notice your background's a little bit different. And so thank you. Even when you're off doing other things, you're committed to doing this series.
Well, and especially this topic, Maria, because I almost think this is the crux of the issue, that there are advocates, activists, people who are saying that some children are born in the wrong body, that they're true trans. And so they'll often even concede that there are kids who aren't trans and that they're being sucked into this. But then they'll go on to say there's, you know, such a thing as a true trans person. Basically, what that contention is that that it's possible to be born in the wrong body, that somehow there's a gender spirit or that your soul can be gendered and somehow that can accidentally get born in the wrong body. I can't think of anything more kind of metaphysical. And so it's really interesting to me that this perspective is often being advanced by people who are atheists, agnostic, oftentimes very critical of spirituality. So it's a very interesting kind of strange thing to be saying that some children are born in the wrong body, some children are true trans. I'm not sure what your response is to that. Like when you hear true trans, what do you think?
I do think that that's a very religious concept. And it's one of the reasons why I'm so adamant when I tell people this is a cult, because this is an ideology. And there's a mom in my district who's the mom of a transgender identified child. And she got very, very angry with me. We were both in the same room one time. I went over and just tried to talk with her. And she was furious with me for calling this an ideology. She's like, this is not an ideology. This is a fact. I'm like, I didn't go any further because sometimes you just know this is not going to end well. So
It's so interesting to me because transitioning was sort of a last resort treatment for adults who had suffered from intractable gender dysphoria for much of their life. Mm-hmm. That's sort of what the concept of transitioning used to be. And again, there are often people who are very damaged, who have had severe trauma in their lives, who struggle with depression, autism, anxiety. These are very troubled individuals who have, you know, sort of sought treatment of different kinds and finally decided that the best solution is for them to present as the opposite sex. This is gender dysphoria, I think, is real. I know I hear some people saying there's no such thing as gender dysphoria. And I just want to say it, I believe there is. I experienced something that is, you know, called gender dysphoria. And it was an extreme discomfort with my body, with my female parts, with the idea that people would view me as a female. So I believe that gender dysphoria is very real and that there are kids who have significant distress because of it. But transitioning is not the only or even the best treatment for gender dysphoria. We know that these kinds of difficult feelings can be addressed by a lot of different interventions.
Yeah, and one of the things that you've mentioned and that I've noticed with a lot of detransitioners, this is another reason why I really believe this is a cult, because one of the things that is taught over and over and over and over again to the recruits, the transitioned kids, is that trans is real, that trans is fact-based. There are actually real trans people. And so many of these detransitions, especially the younger people in their teens and early 20s, they will always caveat what they're saying with, I don't mean to take away from any true trans experience. I don't mean to, and I hear that over and over and over again. And I wanna say, you more than anyone ought to know this isn't real. Like, yeah, gender dysphoria is real, but trans isn't real because there's no way to factually identify that.
It's like they've made a treatment the identity. It's very strange. It's a very strange turn. Again, very cult-like. And I think one of the problems is that every single child, adult, everybody who experiences severe gender dysphoria is going to be thinking, well, I'm one of the true trans, and they're going to pursue these options. If they're told medically transitioning is going to cure them, then of course they're going to pursue that. They're being encouraged to do so. They're being, you know, having all those feelings affirmed. And to me, it's heartbreaking because they're actually being denied appropriate services that will ultimately heal them and not damage their bodies and not reinforce their feelings of self-hatred and shame and discomfort. So it really is, you know, anytime I hear the term true trans and people saying, like you said, oh, I don't want to take away from anybody because they might be true trans. It's so sad to me because they're, you know, I actually heard a number of detransitioners who have actually expressed guilt over taking medications and surgeries from true trans because they detransitioned. They realized that they made a mistake. It's almost like piling on this extra layer of guilt because first of all, they were told they were trans. They were encouraged to transition. They damaged their bodies. They were betrayed by the people who should have been taking care of them. And then they feel guilty because they're hurting the true trans. I keep doing the true trans because yeah. I can't think of any other like way to sort of designate that this is a myth. There's no, you know, there are people with gender dysphoria who choose to transition. But the fact that they're almost afraid to even speak out about it because they're afraid of the repercussions. And I think that's where they're like, okay, I know I wasn't trans, but I'm not wanting to take away from people who are true trans.
Yeah. Well, the cult does generate and create fears in its recruits. Fear is one of the ways that cults keep people in the cult, and they teach them these things. And if you break these rules, you know, you're going to suffer. If you leave the cult, you know, the people outside the cult are heretics. They're the transphobes, the haters, the nasty people. And so when these kids realize, you know what, I'm really not transgender, and they detransition, they've still got that belief system. They're taking that belief system with them, which is what I think part of the reason why it makes it so hard for them to leave the cult, mm-hmm. because they've heard all of this stuff about the awful people outside of it, and they don't want to be one of the awful people outside of it. Well, I know I don't belong in the cult anymore, but I don't want to be like the awful people outside of it. So I'll just say, oh, I believe, you know, there's really true trans, and I think that's what we're seeing.
Yeah.
But when I hear people talk about true trans, I feel like it undercuts the whole sense of reality, and it undercuts the argument against medicalizing children. Mm-hmm. Because if there are true trans, then somebody, those true trans people, medicalization is the appropriate.
Exactly. And that's why it's so insidious, this kind of idea, because they can, you know, any doctor is going to be like, well, this particular patient is a true trans. Oh, sure, there are detransitioners, but my patient is true trans. But then they define transgender as someone who's insistent, consistent, and persistent with gender dysphoria. And so basically, according to their definition, anybody with gender dysphoria is transgender. So it's this very convoluted definition. And again, I think it's so harmful because kids will always be the one who's like, well, I'm actually the true trans until they detransition. And then what I see also is detransition. It's almost like there's this awakening after they've been away from the trans cult for long enough. And suddenly they're like, they're mad. Because they're like, oh, I was lied to, you know, there's just this, you know, once they get away from that, like feeling so, you know, needing to tiptoe and be so careful and not to offend anybody. Once they sort of really separate from that and re-identify with who they really are, they're so angry and they feel so betrayed. Like, how could anybody have done this to me? Yeah, and rightly so.
It makes me think about when you were talking about how kids will think, well, I'm the one who's true trans. It makes me think about young teenagers, 14, 15, 16 years old, when they fall in love the first time. And, you know, that boyfriend, that's going to be, or girlfriend, that's the one. And the adult says, you know, most high school relationships don't last. Not mine. Mine's going to last. You don't understand. I mean, I was one of those. I'll just say I was one of those. No, you don't understand how in love we are. Well, then if all the adults around them say, well, then you need to get married. You need to get married right now. And they get married and put them on. I mean, that's not nearly as insidious.
14 and 15. I mean, that's, it really is. I mean, imagine telling kids, well, if this is the real one, if this is how you're feeling, you better get married. Do it.
Yeah. Have a baby. Get married and have a baby and start your family right now. Yeah. Because you don't want to waste time.
Right.
We know better than that. We're not that stupid.
The other thing that I think is really dangerous about this whole narrative is that it's further stigmatizing mental health issues. It's suggesting that admitting that you have gender dysphoria is so horrible, is so awful, is so bigoted that we have to pretend like you're transgender, like you're something else, because we don't want to hurt your feelings. We don't want to suggest this is a mental health issue. That would be, you know, horribly transphobic. That right there stigmatizes everybody who has mental health issues, but especially those who have gender dysphoria, because it's giving them the message that it's not okay to have mental health issues, that there's nothing wrong up here. It's your body that's to blame. And again, I go back to this anorexic narrative all the time. I just can't even imagine a doctor, you know, telling a young woman who's anorexic that okay, I'm gonna go ahead and sign you up for liposuction and gastric bypass, because, you know, even though you don't seem fat and even though your BMI is dangerously low, if you feel you're fat, we're going to go ahead and take care of it. We don't do that.
No, and that's a great analogy. But when you bring that up with really brainwashed trans rights people, they tell you that's not an analogy. That analogy doesn't work. Well, why? Well, they can't give you a reason, because it is a really good analogy. But when I was thinking, when you were talking about telling people who have gender dysphoria that, you have to transition, you have to medically transition, we're also telling people you can't struggle through something. There's no way to cope through something that's difficult for you. And I think about the movie A Beautiful Mind, and I can't remember the mathematician's name who was in that. It was the main character in the story, but he was schizophrenic. And he saw people who weren't there. And there's a spoiler alert here. If you haven't seen the movie, you know, skip over this next part. But he learns ways to cope. He never gets rid of those apparitions that he sees. Those people follow him around. But toward the end of the movie, he's walking into his classroom and there's somebody that he hasn't met before, says, "Excuse me, professor, can I talk to you?" And he stops a student who he knows and he says, "Do you see that person?" And the student was like, yeah. So that way the professor knew this is a real person and not a figment of my imagination. There are ways to cope with difficulties.
And talk about brave and authentic. I mean, being able to come up with those coping mechanisms to deal with those mental health issues, to me, is so much more, you know, that the strength of character there that it takes to do that, to admit, yes, I have this problem and I'm going to work hard to overcome it. And we know people can overcome mental health issues. They do it all the time. Yeah. And to relegate them to sort of, you know, no, you're unsalvageable. You know, the only way you can deal with this is to damage your body. It's just, to me, that's just a horrible message.
Yeah, the brain and the mind are so much more malleable than the body. The body is this sensitive system that, I mean, anybody who's taken any kind of medication knows a medication that fixes one thing typically has side effects with something else. Everything's so interconnected and this perfect balance when it's healthy. And to take a healthy body and introduce pathology to it is completely unethical. And I'm horrified that doctors are doing this. And every time I see a picture of a doctor with a girl who's had her breast cut off And he's there with a smarmy grin. Mm-hmm. Oh, I just get so angry. And I think, mm-hmm. I want to see you in jail one day.
Yeah, and that's where they belong. That's where people who abuse others, especially vulnerable people, belong. Mm-hmm. And it's so interesting to me because one of the rallying cries I hear so often is, you're erasing trans people. You're denying their existence. And I'm thinking, well, you're denying the very existence of your daughter or son, and you're erasing them as the biological sex that they are, and turning them into this, you know, new persona. You're erasing the very concept of womanhood and manhood. You're erasing the concept of gay and lesbian. So if we're going to talk, you know, use that kind of language about erasing and denying the existence, then I think it's really easy to turn that back and say, well, guess what?
And their own language, the term dead name, mm-hmm. gives it all away. Yeah. A dead name is a name that belongs to a dead person. Yeah. And there, you cannot argue that, oh, my child is the same person, just changed sexes. Oh, that was a dead person who no longer exists, and this is a new person. No, that those don't work together. It's one or the other.
And it's so interesting that you bring that up, because the other tactic that they use all the time is suicide, you know, that people are going to kill themselves if they're not allowed to do this. And in all honesty, they're kind of advocating this sort of suicide of the self. Like, they're not killing the body, but they are advocating that people basically kill the very essence of who they are and become somebody new. You know, it's not quite suicide, but it really is like a metaphysical suicide. We want you to kill yourself, your selfhood, who you are, and become somebody new. And so to me, a lot of the language they use, I feel like, and when you really look at it, first of all, it's very metaphysical. It's very religious. It's very cult-like. But it doesn't hold water. Their arguments are so vacuous. I just feel like it's a net, you know, there's nothing, you know, you pour water in and it just goes right through, because, you know, all of the arguments that they have, it just doesn't take that much to sort of turn it around and say, well, if you're against suicide, why are you advocating for all these kids to kill the essence of who they are, to sacrifice their very essence of their being to this cult of yours to become somebody new?
Well, and not only their own selves, but all their relationships. Mm-hmm. If your parents aren't on board, cut them off. Mm-hmm. If, you know, if your friends don't like it, cut them off. That's very cult-like. To cut out anybody who doesn't agree with you. So that son is no longer a son, is no longer has, you know, has parents, no longer has grandparents, no longer has cousins, no longer has aunts and uncles. Now they're completely cut off. And who steps in to fill that? Oh, the glitter family.
Right. And we know that's always damaging. To, you know, these are kids who are so vulnerable. And all of this, again, is based on an ideology or even, you know, a religion. I'm beginning more and more to think of this as a religious belief. When I see parents being compelled to go to re-education classes in order to have contact with their kids, if the parents are divorced, and seeing this more and more, these re-education classes where courts are sending people to go to learn about how to sort of honor people in this religion.
I'm wondering if just attending the class is going to be enough, or if the instructor of the class has to sign off, right, and say, yes, this person has been adequately re-educated.
Right. They have converted to our belief system.
If it is, it's the state religion now.
It is. It's the state religion. And I mean, this particularly during this Pride Month, I'm just shocked at how, you know, this is not a marginalized group. This ideology has just completely infiltrated everything. And again, if somebody had a litmus test for true trans, if somebody could, you know, show me a genetic marker, if somebody could show me a test and say, okay, if we give you this test, this comes back positive, this person is going to be, you know, the one in a million who's going to benefit from transitioning, I would be slightly more open to it. However, there are people who are, you know, genetically predisposed to anxiety, genetically predisposed to depression, genetically predisposed to being OCD or schizophrenic, that doesn't mean we just sort of, you know, throw our hands up and say, oh, well, too bad.
Yeah.
We do our very best to provide them the most functional coping mechanisms, the best way to deal with those difficulties. We don't just say, oh, well, bummer, you're depressed. Well, here's some, you know, an overdose of meth, you know, whatever, go kill yourself.
Yeah, it used to be that medicalizing was the last resort. Exactly. You tried therapy. You tried, you know, doing anything other than medicalization.
Medicalization was recognized as a treatment, not an identity. And that's where I just am so frustrated with how this is, you know, people say, well, it's an identity. Well, first of all, identities are just as ephemeral as, you know, I mean, people go from being Christian to Jewish. People go from being Democrat to Republican. Mm-hmm. People go from
being single to married.
Right. Our identity
back again.
Change all the time. To suggest that identity is some sacrosanct thing that doesn't change is absurd. Our lives are about, you know, ever evolving identity. So, so for that to be sort of this, like, no, it's that concept of a spirit that was born in the wrong body. We don't have political spirits. We don't have age spirits. We don't have eye color spirits. We don't have, you know, religious, we have, you know, some people believe that we do have a spirit, but it's not like a Jewish spirit gets put in one body, a Christian spirit gets put in another, a Muslim in the other. Oh my gosh, you are a Muslim that was born in a Christian body. That must be so hard.
I never thought about it that way before, but that's a really good point. Well, and we have a clip here from a detransitioner. Can you introduce it? Because you've actually spoken to him.
Hey, this is Hashi, and he is a detransitioner. He lived as a woman for a while, went through medical interventions, and then realized that it was a way of kind of running away from his mental health issues and his very traumatic childhood, which again, we see over and over again, either severe physical or sexual abuse causes that dissociative process. And so once that sort of has been entrenched in somebody's, you know, that's a coping mechanism, then it's really easy to jump from that dissociation to that sort of that sense of like, oh, I'm just gonna become a totally different person. So let's listen to him and see what his insights are.
If you read the scientific articles about the origin or the sort of the basis of transgenderism, you'll see that there's a strong emphasis in that it's biological, it's something innate. You have, there's some kind of gender identity that everybody has, and it's just that some people are born this way. They have a built-in, you know, they're the opposite sex in their brains, you know, like Bruce Jenner. This is based on the assertions of a few psychologists. It's not based on any scientific evidence, it's not research. It's just in the 60s, they began just saying, well, yeah, it's built in, it's part of their who they are. And that just kind of took hold, and it's not based on anything. And so over the course of the past 30 years, they've been looking at people's brains and thinking about what about hormones in utero and all these various ways that people might have had their gender identity scrambled. And it all looks very nice when you read the paper. They say, whoa, there's tantalizingly close evidence, and it's very, very suggestive of some association here. It's spin, and if you read it carefully, there's nothing really in there that connects. There's enormous gaps, probably 10 or 20 other more likely explanations for any associations they do see. So they just selectively choose these outcomes, and pretty much all of the science investigating that is an exercise in confirmation bias and selection bias.
So here is someone who undoubtedly would have been labeled as a true trans, who suffered from severe gender dysphoria, sort of got other kinds of treatments to try and help it, and decided that the only way to really address it was to get these medical interventions. And then at some point realized that really wasn't helping either. And that, I think, is probably even more important, is that these medical interventions don't cure the gender dysphoria. So we go through all these interventions, all these, you know, really invasive things that damage the body, and it doesn't even cure the underlying gender dysphoria.
Don't we hear that from a lot of detransitioners?
Yeah, that help.
yeah, I got all this stuff done and I realized it didn't help. And everything that was wrong with me was still there, but now I'm also—
I've got more wrong. And it is, it's this, and what happens, what I hear over and over again is that they first socially transition, then they're like, well, you know, I'll start hormones. Well, I'll get surgery. They get, you know, once they get to the point where there's nothing more they can do to their bodies, that's when it hits, like, oh no. And how heartbreaking for them to have gone through, you know, to damage, as you said, it's like they still have all the problems that they had before, but now they've compounded it because they've damaged their bodies. A lot of times they're going to be having to take synthetic hormones for the rest of their lives, which is a financial cost.
Well, and you pointed out in an earlier episode, I didn't realize this, that once a person has been on wrong sex hormones for a while, his or her body stops making the natural hormones. So even after detransitioning, that person has to continue taking what would have been their appropriate sex hormones synthetically because their body has stopped making it. That's so insidious. That's so nefarious. Don't tell me the pharmaceutical companies don't know that.
And that's where, I mean, bottom line, this is, I really just believe that this is, you know, somebody with really, who was very keen on business and had absolutely no moral foundation decided that this was a great way to make money because they are making so much money on this, you know?
Well, yeah, we talked about that market report from Global Market Insights last year that came out and said that sex reassignment surgery is a growth market. They expect it to make billions of dollars, billions with a B, in the next, I think it was 5 years.
Right, yeah. And I just, to me, any medical practitioner who's willing to make money by damaging somebody who already is struggling with mental health issues, like you said, they belong in jail.
They do, yeah. And I hope we see that.
Yeah, I do too.
Before long. Well, we have one question. This came from a parenting group and it's such a great question. And I've heard this from more than one place, but this parent wrote it so well. My therapist asked a question that I would now like to ask all of you. She was asking the group. If your child does all of the therapy and work to find the core cause of their gender dysphoria, and it turns out they are truly transgender, will you support them?
And my answer is there is no such thing as true trans. This is a kid.
Well, that's what I wanted to say. This assumes the existence of true trans.
Right.
And that's what this ideology does. It loads all these assumptions in and then calls you a horrible person for not buying into them.
Right. And that, you know, to me, that's just saying, you know, what if you're, again, depression, what if your kid had depression? They went through lots of things and they really still felt bad. Should you just go ahead and let them kill themselves? Of course not. Of course not. No way. We would never do that. And we should.
Well, and let's address the word support as well. She said, you know, will you support your child? In trans speak, support means go along with everything that child wants. Yeah. That's what support means. Yeah. If you don't agree to everything the child says, then you're labeled an unsupportive parent. Mm-hmm. And that's not what support means. That's not the truth. True support is giving somebody what they need, not necessarily what they want. Just like affirmation in trans speak is the same thing as support. It means agreeing with everything they say. Affirmation is affirming somebody's worth, somebody's value, somebody's inherent personhood. And they've taken these words and assigned these different meanings to them. While most of us in society are like, oh yeah, affirmation, that's a good thing. Oh yeah, support, that's a good thing.
And again, like you're not affirming your kid, that sounds horrible. Why would you, or you're not affirming your friend or your husband who's decided to be trans? Like,
what it really means is, oh, you're not agreeing with them that something's inherently wrong and they should lop off body parts.
Right.
Yeah.
And the suggestion that that is somehow better than saying they need some mental health services confounds me. I mean, and again, it's that whole idea of true trans. And one of the things that I also see is that people who believe in this concept of true trans are really good at using some of the things that we've already talked about, which is, you know, rewriting history. They go back and, you know, suddenly it's like, no, I was true trans from the get, you know, from in utero. They come up with all these anecdotal stories about, you know, oh, I was just hiding it, or I was afraid nobody would love me if I came out. All these, you know, ways to rewrite history in order to support the idea that they were true trans. Again, it's so sad to me that we're so freaked out that this could be a mental health issue, that we're willing to go through all these kind of somersaults and absurd acrobats to try and suggest that, oh no, this isn't a mental health issue. We wouldn't want to say that. Why not? Is it so bad? Is it so bad to have a mental health issue? I mean, if it is, then the, you know, they're in their speak, we're being very ableist.
That's a very good point. I would just encourage anyone who's still questioning whether there's such a thing as true trans, do some of your own research. I mean, really look at what is supporting this idea of a transgender ideology. I have yet to have anybody explain to me what transgender means without using sexist stereotypes. If you can come up with a definition of it that is not circular reasoning, well, trans is someone who thinks they're trans. Or, you know, oh, it's when a boy does things that are associated with girliness. If you can find a definition that doesn't include either of those two things, I'd love to hear it. I have yet to hear one.
Right.
I hope we hear less people spouting true trans in the future. I hope people really start thinking about this and giving it the deep thought that it needs, because kids are being damaged.
Well, society is being damaged. I mean, this whole idea is harming everybody.
Yeah, it really is. Well, thanks so much, Erin. Next week, we are going to talk about pornography and gender dysphoria. So that's going to be
some people might be really confused about, but I think that after next week's episode, it, you know, some light bulbs are going to come on.
Yeah,
they're going to be a little cringy. People are going to be a little uncomfortable because it is a very difficult topic. But
it is a difficult
topic. I don't know that it's any more difficult than the idea that a child can be born in the wrong body, Maria. I mean,
that's true. Every one of these episodes, I'm like, oh, this is a difficult topic. But this is just a difficult topic.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Maria.
Thanks. We'll see you next time.
Okay. Bye. Bye-bye.
We are not doctors or therapists. We are not giving medical or psychiatric advice, and we offer no guarantee of outcomes. We simply want to talk about how to support and love kids using long understood best practices from the fields of psychology, education, and child development. We're glad you joined in our conversation today, and we hope that you took away something you can put in your toolkit for parenting.